Okay, today is August 5th, 2008. I think I'll begin by saying a couple of words about, well, first of all, we welcome those of you who have not come before. If it's your first time, you're more than welcome. And we'd like to welcome our guests from Belfast, who have driven all the way from Belfast to spend an evening with us. So very much appreciate your sentiment. This is a monthly planetary planner that I've put together. It's done fairly simply, and it's calculated for Ireland and the UK. And it shows the good days and the less than good days throughout the month. And I've just called them simply gold, silver, bronze, and gray, because everybody knows what this means. So gold is exceptionally good days. Silver is very good days. Bronze, average days, just a typical day. And gray, not so good. So this is not your personal horoscope or your personal forecast. It doesn't work like that. This gauges where the planets are in the sky on those days and tells you whether they're good days for business or important decisions or important purchases. Like, say you want to buy a car or a fridge or a house or a lot of equipment, whatever it might be. You want to avoid gray days. These are problematic. So gray days in astrological understanding would be moon with Mars, moon with Rahu, moon with Ketu, moon with Saturn. These would be gray days. Anytime you buy something on days like that, especially moon with Saturn, you will pay the price, believe me. You will have all kinds of problems. So gray days, if you're doing something very important and you need it to succeed, I don't mean grocery shopping, that you can do any day, but something very important, then you do not want to do it on gray days. August is not a great month, because there's usually more silver and gold days than this month affords. But there are a couple of gold days. As you see there, Tuesday the 12th, it changes to gold 35 minutes after midnight. Wednesday 13th is gold. And Thursday the 14th is gold up until noon. 12:13 p.m. And then you have some silver days, 23rd, 24th, 25th, some silver days there. So take advantage of those. That's how you use this, very simply. Today I thought we would talk a little bit about Saraswati Devi. As we've spoken many, many times, in the yoga conception or Vedic conception of philosophy, there's no such thing as God without goddess. There's no such thing as the masculine manifestation of God without the female manifestation. It doesn't exist. So it'd be like God with a right hand and no left hand. Not possible. Even to the extent that the energy of God, which is embodied by the feminine aspect, is usually given greater importance. When you say their names, the different couples like Sita Ram, or Radha Krishna, or Uma Mahesh, or Lakshmi Narayan. So these are always putting the name of the feminine energetic aspect before the masculine. If the feminine is not given its due, and you've heard me say this numerous times, we're in trouble. The feminine must always be offered respect and regard, and not tolerated or given orders, but respected and lifted in an attitude of honor and appreciation. When that happens in the world becomes a heavenly place. When that doesn't happen in the world, you will see problems, one after another, after another, after another. Take our world as an example, because that's one of the main reasons that there are so many problems in our world, in our modern day world. Because the feminine is exploited, taken advantage of in so many different ways, as is Mother Earth exploited. So we have to not only regard the feminine with respect and regard, but we also have to understand the sacred nature of the feminine. So Saraswati is one of the major expressions of the goddess, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about her. We've placed another picture of her temporarily here, and that's Saraswati there in the middle of those of that triptych in the middle there. We also have received this beautiful painting this week, a few days ago. These are yantras, and here we have the feminine Shri Yantra, and here is the masculine Vishnu Yantra. Yantras are symmetrical spiritual diagrams, and simply put, many people will say yes, they're used for meditation. You stare at them and you meditate. Yeah, true. But yantra in Sanskrit actually means machine. So there are many yantras parked outside. Those are also yantras. But this yantra can activate your psyche and your psycho-spiritual centers, the chakras, etc., at the deepest levels. It can take you to the deepest places or the highest dimensions when focused on. So we commissioned this painting from a lady that paints yantras, and I think she did a very nice job. And now she's busy recuperating. She's okay though. Okay, so let's talk about Saraswati. Saraswati is the original Renaissance woman. So here in this country you say Renaissance. Where I come from, they say Renaissance. Same thing. It means somebody who is multi-talented, multi-gifted, learned it in many, many disciplines, eclectic disposition, having studied many things, and competent and talented in many areas, not one area. The term Saraswati consists of two words. Saras means essence, means water or essence of a thing, in the sense that the juice is always the the concentrated essence. And vati or vati means she who possesses this essence. So she's the one who possesses or embodies the essence of things. And therefore, the one who knows their fundamental meaning. What would it be like to know or understand the essence of everything? If you would be able, then you'd approach the Godhead. Correct? The archetype or model of Saraswati is found in women. I wrote this article. I'm sort of directing it mostly at women, so gentlemen, please forgive me. But that's kind of the way I wrote it. But the archetype of Saraswati is found in women who search for meaning, individuality, and personal expression in life. Though many may not necessarily be leaders, more often than not, they are thoughtful persons and thinkers, original thinkers. They want to know how things work and why. So they ask questions. And they will not settle for a cursory explanation or patronizing pacification from some authority figure. There. Just be a good little girl and go on now. That doesn't work for Saraswati. They will accept only the truth, or that being unavailable, something that is useful and practical. These are intelligent and inspired women. Do they necessarily fit in comfortably? Not always. So, Brahma, the creator, we've talked about Brahma many times. Brahma creates all life, according to Vedic understanding, in the material world, in the material universe. Brahma is not God, he's not Vishnu Tattva, he is a jiva. He's a soul like you or me, but in a very high position. And just like the Pope would be in the Catholic Church, Pope comes up from the ranks and he is considered to be, what's the word they say he is? Infallible. So the jury's out on that one, but that's what they say. But Brahma is a jiva, a regular soul, like you and me, who has attained this very, very high position. So Brahma the creator, in preparation for creation, he went into meditation, because that's what he does before he creates. Isn't that what you do? Do you not meditate before you create something? Before you plan? Of course you do. Guess who started all that? So Brahma goes into meditation, and sattva, or the quality of pure goodness, wells up within his mind. Pure goodness. Pure goodness means a state of being wherein the ultimate benefit of everyone concerned is the objective. You want to know if you're in pure goodness? Then whatever it is you're thinking about, pardon me, or planning on doing, will benefit everyone. Not just yourself, not just your immediate family, not just a flag-waving nation, not just people that live on this side of the border, not just people who have this skin color. It would benefit everybody. Pure goodness. Right? From that focused goodness sprang a beautiful young girl. Brahma inquired about her identity. She replied, "Well, since I am born from you, you must assign to me my identity and responsibilities. You tell me, what is my purpose?" Brahma proclaimed that her name would be Saraswati, and that her primary position would be to sit upon everyone's tongue. Because she's the goddess of speech. Speech. And upon the tongues of learned and creative people, she would actually be found to be dancing. So when people speak sweetly, poetically, they inspire you, they motivate you, they fill you with knowledge or love or joy, there she's dancing. Something to aspire to. Secondarily, she would exist upon the earth in the form of a river. Now, there was a river in India called the Saraswati, and there are archaeological evidences of the fact that that river existed, but the physical river is no longer there at this time. But the sages.
Kumbh Mela was that.
Yeah, it did. The Kumbh Mela took place originally at the confluence of Saraswati River, Ganga, Ganges, and Yamuna. Now, this is Prayag, no? That's right. But Saraswati is no longer there in physical form, but the sages say that it is still there on the spiritual dimension. Okay. The Kumbh Mela is the gathering that they have. The official one is once every 12 years. And how many people come to Kumbh Mela? Millions. Isn't it? It's the largest spiritual gathering in the world. And the people in the West, they never heard of it. Have you heard of it? Everybody knows when it is. They don't need to print a poster. Because they know. And Kumbh means Aquarius. Kumbh means actually water pot, but that's Aquarius. And when Jupiter in the sky goes into Aquarius that year, because it happens once every 12 years, that's the Kumbh Mela. Everybody comes. Now they have one every year, small one. Yeah? Yeah, but the Maha Kumbh Mela, the major one, is once every 12 years, no?
When's the next one?
Jupiter and Aquarius, that one? Oh, it's coming up in 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, big one. The Jupiter moves into Capricorn, into Makar in December. December 19th, 2009, Jupiter moves into Kumbh. December 19th. So many people. We have a video. It's
just where they all jump into the Ganges.
Correct.
See it on television.
Yeah, that's it. And the Nag Babas are there, the guys who are the Shaivites who run around the naked with the tridents. And, it's pretty colorful place. You know? Okay. So thirdly, she would live within Brahma, the creator himself, in order to provide ongoing inspiration. It is believed that creation originally took place through the use of mantra, sound vibration. And that Saraswati is born from his mouth through the process of creative speech. As the universe's original muse, Saraswati is the muse, a Saraswati's favorite abode is residing in the hearts and minds of innovative, individualistic, and inspired human beings, male and female. It's a good subject for you, my friend. A talented, creative, or career-minded woman would do well to borrow a page or two from her book. Those who walk the path of the Saraswati archetype must find a suitable means of expression for their gifts, talents and individuality. Be they teachers, scientists, speakers, inventors, artists, actresses, dancers, or musicians. Saraswati represents the union of power and intelligence from which creation arises. The union of power. We could translate power as talent, you know, ability, and intelligence, the way it would be directed and what form it would take. Yeah? Speech is the medium through which knowledge expresses itself in manifestation. Saraswati is the source of speech, which is the necessary precursor to any substantiation in form. She is the goddess of eloquence, wisdom, learning, and the patron of the arts and music. She revealed language and writing to man and is the mother of poetry. Since Saras means water or fluid, it refers to anything that flows, right? As such applies to speech, thought, and creative composition. These women are gifted, well, we're saying women here, but also men who are inspired by Saraswati, are gifted linguists, poets, and orators. Some enjoy speaking and addressing audiences. They often possess wisdom, which defies their age or educational qualification. What does that mean? It means they know stuff. This is a wisdom of wisdom or inner knowing which they have developed through the course of previous lifetimes and is not contingent upon their education or life experience in this lifetime. In other words, it is a knowing that feels more like an embodiment or possession of the truth. It does not reside in the brain, this knowing, but is powerfully felt throughout the entire being. It's that feeling. Sometimes you know when a thing is true. You just know. If somebody asks you, well, explain it, prove it to me. Sometimes you just can't. You can't offer a proof. But you absolutely know in every cell of your being that it's true. And it is. It's that kind of truth. And those who have it know exactly what I'm talking about. A great sage and author by the name of Yajnavalkya once meditated on Saraswati for inspiration. And she appeared to him wearing ornaments and vowels and consonants. Ornaments of vowels and consonants and sounding the sacred syllable. Om. So she had vowels and consonants hanging all over. So it was good, yeah. As a river goddess, she's recognized for her ability to cleanse and fertilize. What does a river do? Cleanses, fertilizes. She is the bestower of bounty, fertility, and riches. Her waters enrich the land and render it fertile for production. But the land in this sense is the fertile plain of the mind in which we sow the seeds of creativity and genius. Saraswati is also a healer and her purifying power is associated with medicine and healing. Women of the Saraswati archetype are students and practitioners of the healing arts. They may be doctors, shamans, priestesses, naturopaths, chiropractors, acupuncturists, healers, even white witches. Bruja Blanca. They are not stuck in doctrine and dogma with regard to a particular system or method of healing. Rather, they are open-minded and are ready to embrace that which works, even though it may be foreign or unfamiliar to them. or judged as unscientific by the prejudicial view of Western medicine known as the drug and scalpel brigade. They don't have a need to conform or to be right. Rather, they prefer to be effective, or rather to find and utilize what is truly efficacious. The Saraswati archetype does not fearfully cling to her own methodology at the expense of higher truth. Rather, she aspires always toward higher truth with an enlightened willingness to let go of or abandon her own methodology if it does not serve or prove effective. Rivers are waterways over which a journey may take place. The crossing from one bank to the other is sometimes representative of crossing from this world of material attachment to the world of spiritual emancipation. Attachment to freedom. From ignorance to enlightenment. From mundane to divine. One may also journey upon the river, in which sense the symbology may refer to a voyage from here to there, from one state of consciousness to another. But along the way, one is required to give up one's existing state of mind or human limitation by being symbolically drowned in the waters of the river. So in that sense, the river offers initiation, transition, and metamorphosis to the spiritual aspirant. The old self is drowned, and the new self takes birth from the amniotic fluid of the womb. Are we not all born from the water? And when the water breaks, here we come. Also, from the same point of view as the Christian conception of baptism, for the purpose of purification, spiritual pilgrims are required to bathe in the waters of the holy rivers, such as the Ganges, the Yamuna, and the Saraswati, to wash away the sins. That is, the negative karmic reaction to their acts of separation from God, or ego-driven acts. And by so doing, one comes closer to ending the cycle of samsara of repeated birth and death. So, sin is essentially acting out of truth, out of balance. This place in which we live is called the universe. We explained some time ago that there are many, many universes. We talked about that one day. I think you were here that night. Many universes. So what does the word universe mean?
Unions.
Mm-hmm. And verse?
Truth.
This is the place of one truth. There is only one truth, and you're either in harmony with it or you're not. And if you're out of whack with the truth, you got problems of one kind or another. Or if you think that your truth is the truth, but it is not in harmony with the one truth, again, you've got some problems. So if there's only one truth, what are we going to do with all these truths that people espouse and say, well, you know, in our religion, this is how you get saved, If you don't believe what we believe, well, too bad for you. You're going to hell. And our group is being saved. You hear a lot of that. So there is one truth, and without that truth, how would the planets spin? Huge bodies of mass spinning through space. Imagine this. Weightlessly in perfect orbits. You can set your watch by these orbits. And they don't collide. Every day, the sun rises 1 minute. 1 minute. More or less each day. One truth. That's the only way to explain it. If we gave the organization and orbiting of the solar system over to a political party, they would make promises of all the wonderful things they're going to do to our solar system and the orbit of the planets. And things would begin to collide. We have real problems. All right.
Now that God's in charge.
Yeah. See, always remember, don't be afraid. Never be afraid of what these characters with weapons and bombs and nuclear weapon. Don't be afraid of these people. Because they're not really in charge of anything. They think they're in charge. You know, it's like your little child coming up. He's got a sword. He's got a helmet. He's got a shield. I'm going to go. And he tells you what he's going to go and do. Right? I'm going to go defeat the entire army, Dad. And you pat him on his head. Good man. You go ahead. You go give it to those guys. You defeat them. That's like God. Yeah, pat him on the head. Yeah, go ahead. Knock yourself out. It's about the same as that. Don't worry. There's nothing to worry about. Nothing will happen that is not meant to happen. There won't be any oops. Oops. It won't work like that. So no matter what happens, don't worry. There's always the higher power in charge. Always. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and floods, tsunamis, fires. These are terrible things, especially when many people get killed. Because I'm strange, I get a wonderful feeling when I see these things. Not because people are suffering and dying, because I know that God's in charge. That's the feeling it gives me. I lived in Los Angeles for many, many years, and I've been in many earthquakes. So when my children were very small, my son, my daughter, and the earthquakes would come, we'd stand in the door jamb, you know, in there, and the floor would go like this. You feel the floor. It's like a wave going through the floor. And so I'd say, okay, come on, let's go now. You ready? Let's surf it. Surf the wave. They'd look at me like, you sure, Dad? Yeah, come on, come on. Surf the wave now. And as long as things weren't falling from the ceiling and the pictures weren't falling off the wall, you know, we had fun during the earthquake. I told you I'm a bit strange. The Saraswati woman is not content simply to sit home, be solely domestic, and have a routine and ordinary life. She is her own heroine on her quest for the Holy Grail. For her Holy Grail. If she is a materialist, then her life is likely to be a search for knowledge. If she is a spiritualist, then her life is a search for knowledge, truth, and emancipation.
What does emancipation mean?
Liberation. And what is she willing to sacrifice or give up for her achievement of the Holy Grail? Anything and everything. This does not necessarily mean she is reckless or injudicious or insensitive. But she will do what is required of her and risk security in favor of opportunity. Some people choose security. They don't want a risk. They want everything to be stable. Many women will choose security. No criticism. Some people will choose opportunity. Opportunity carries with it much more risk, just many more ups and downs, generally more difficult, unless you succeed right away. But the Saraswati woman would choose opportunity. Does her search end when she finds her Holy Grail? In some cases, yes. In others, she redefines what the Holy Grail is or what it means for her, and once again takes up the renewed quest. In Western mythic tradition, the dragon guards the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail is anything of value that you may want to achieve. That's what the Holy Grail is. Your purpose, freedom, fulfillment, love, honor, destiny, etc. Your Holy Grail. In myth, we often find the dragon guarding a treasure or a princess, virgin. Though he may guard these things with tenacity, he himself is incapable of enjoying them. That's why he's a good guard. Therefore, he makes a good sentinel. At the same time, he has no intention of letting anybody else take them and use them. Though he has been posted to keep watch over the Grail, he most likely cannot recall who it was that told him to guard the Grail or exactly what he was posted for. Exactly when he was posted, sorry. The dragon can represent what? Society. Family values. Hopes and expectations of parents. Community responsibility. National identity. Racial identity, etc. The dragon could be anything. And dragon's job is to maintain the status quo. Do not let anything change. Right? The dragon is representative of the status quo, whatever it might be. And his job is to protect it so no one will overthrow it and supplant it. That's what revolution is. That's what revolution's about. We're tired of the way things are and we're going to overthrow it. Oftentimes, you have a corrupt regime or a corrupt political system. Back in the Middle Ages, it was generally an aristocracy or a royal family. Well, you'll find that a little bit today too, here and there. And they're corrupt. You've got the wealthy aristocracy and then you've got the poor people. No middle class. You know, you've got the king, you've got the servants. That's it. So then, sooner or later, there's a revolution. It all gets overthrown. That was the Bolshevik Revolution. It didn't work because why didn't it work?
shooters or put them there?
Because the workers cannot control the government. That's one reason, but there's even a bigger reason.
Human nature. Somebody wants to be at the top.
Always. Even though they say that it's we're all equal, no one's at the top. Can't be. But in communism, God is not present. There's no God at the center. It's atheism. Anything that has no recognition of God will die. Guaranteed. Only a question of time. We're not talking about a religion. We're talking about the spirit that animates everything. Okay.
It's like all for China.
Hmm?
It's like all for China.
Yeah. Well, but you see, China has now changed. And it is not as communistic as it used to be. Now they're allowing people to worship at churches and they're allowing people to have businesses. Communism means we're all equal. Everything belongs to the state. I used to work for a Russian doctor in Los Angeles who lived under the communist regime in Russia. And the truck drivers made six times the amount of money that he made as a doctor. Which is, you know, go figure. Anyway, the dragon protects the establishment and the existing order, or the existing chaos, like in Myanmar. There's no order, there's chaos. But the dragon, the army, protects it. Right? Tibet. Again, these are contemporary problems. In the Western tradition, his name is? Do you know the name they call the dragon? Holdfast. Holdfast. When I was a little boy growing up in Canada, in Saskatchewan, my grandmother lived in a little farming town called Holdfast. I always try to figure out, what the heck does that name mean? Holdfast. And I read this, you know, many years later. Holdfast. Never let go.
You know. That's your mom.
Yeah, I mean, my grandmother wasn't like that. My mom and she were a little bit different. Okay, so holding on to the established order so that the threat of rebellion or change cannot topple the existing regime. Okay, we said that. The dragon is also the personification of death, for he's ready and able to kill anyone who challenges his authority by trying to seize the grail, or the government. In other words, one must be willing to face death or a kind of death in exchange for gaining the grail or the attainment of one's truth. Are you willing to die for what you believe? Are you willing to die for your truth? How many people are willing to do that? Not many. It's too hard. Too difficult. So I'm not saying what's right, what's wrong.
Yeah, but there's so many people that have a distorted view of what's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Death may be part of the price. Defeating the dragon does not necessarily mean overcoming death. Rather, it means dying from one identity and being reborn as the other. It means the ego is ruled, which is ruled by fear and limitation, or the persona, which is under the control of the dictates of the established order, is sacrificed and undergoes a death. How does this happen in the modern world? When somebody's in a job and they don't like the job. But it pays money. And they tolerate it day in and day out, and day in and day out, and maybe they got a boss who's not a good man or a good woman. She doesn't treat them fairly. And they just tolerate and tolerate and tolerate. They'd rather be anywhere else but there. And then one day, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. And the boss says something, and they say, heck with you. Take your job. I don't want to. I'm leaving. I quit. And out they go. That is a defeat of the dragon. Is it not? Confronted the dragon. On the other hand, somebody would say, yeah, but you're out of a job. But you're free. You're free. Now you can either go and get a different job, or you empower yourself to come closer to the expression of your own truth. What is self-realization? It is simply this, that each day you take only one step closer to your own truth. Isn't it? That's what it is. Each day, one small step, not even a big step, closer to embodying your truth, to embodying your universe, to becoming one with the universe, the single truth. Isn't that it? And can we just do it all at once, one great giant step? No, it's too hard. It's too much. For most of us, the system would crash. Right? Like a computer system. You'd be running Windows. Especially Windows Vista. You'd be shutting down left and right. All right? To all the Mac users out there. Did you? Good man.
Yeah. I've always used a Mac.
Yeah. Me too. Since 1984, since it came out, I've been using a Mac. Just confronted the dragon right from the beginning. The Microsoft dragon. Okay. Okay, there's nice there. I'm not necessarily going to read the whole thing, so.
How many pages do you have there?
I got a few, but I want to read you this one thing here. Residing in Saraswati is the power of sound or speech known in Sanskrit as Shabda Brahma. Shabda Brahma. What does Shabda Brahma mean?
Creation.
Well, actually, Brahma means spiritual in this case. And Shabda is sound. So, spiritual sound. Divine sound. It is stated in the Vedas that sound and sound vibration, or mantra, is the technique used by Brahma to bring about the creation of the material universes. What do they say in the Bible? In the beginning was the same thing, right? Was the word. The name of a thing is, in a sense, non-different from the thing itself. If I say rose, you think of a fragrant flower with beautiful concentric petals, thorns on its stem in a color that comes to your mind. Red, perhaps yellow. The name of a thing invokes its presence or memory. Right? Another example. If I ask what I may bring you, you request a cup of tea. I then bring a cup of tea. Your saying the word tea creates its manifestation in your reality. The tea appears. And that is the fulfillment of your desire. Right? Thus, the natural order is thought, then name or word, then physical manifestation. On the heavenly plane, or even higher, the spiritual plane, the name and the God or the goddess spoken of or invoked are non-different. Here I can say Felicity, but Felicity and Felicity's name, herself and her name, are different. But as we said many times, on the spiritual plane, God and the name, the same. The same energy is in the name as the physical presence. It's non-different. That might be hard for us to grasp because we're not used to that concept, but that's how it works on that dimension. So, that is, they are the name. To say or to repeat the name is to invoke or actually associate with that divine being. In what way would this not work? It all depends on your level or belief or conviction. For example, if you tell me you're planning to buy a Mercedes-Benz automobile, you're stating your desire and your intention. If instead you end up buying a Ford Taurus, a much more modestly priced car, then somehow between your speaking your desire and the actual manifestation of that desire into life, something is at odds. Something is lost. So you're not manifesting exactly what you said. That's the point. Okay. There's just one short little... here, I want to read this. I'll move on. Once a very powerful demon by the name of Kumbhakarna, having performed severe austerities and penances for probably 1,000 years, because this would have been the golden age or silver age when they would live for thousands of years. In this age, people only live for 100 years, very short time. In the golden age, they live for 100,000 years. In the silver age, people would live for 10,000 years. In the bronze age, they live for 1,000 years. So here, people don't even make it to 100. What, are you kidding me? You're here and you're gone. So Kumbhakarna did austerities for thousands of years. And then Brahma appeared to him, the creator. He says, okay, what do you want? I know you want something here. You're doing all this tapas, this penance. What would you like? And he asked Brahma for a boon or a blessing which would enable him to defeat the gods. The gods, which would be akin to angels, archangels, the hierarchy. By causing them to vanish, make the gods disappear. He just wanted the mantra, and they're gone. At Brahma's request, Saraswati situated herself upon the tongue of Kumbhakarna. And he was going to pronounce one word, and the word that he was going to say is Nirdevatva. Nirdevatva, which means, nir means not, deva means God, and tva is the state of existence. Nirdevatva. And the gods would be gone. So, knowing that he was going to do this, Brahma told Saraswati, please go stand on his tongue now. And twist the syllables a little bit, yeah, like this. So, Saraswati caused him to mispronounce the word. And instead of saying nirdevatva, which means wiping out the gods, he said nidravatva. Nirdevatva, nidravatva. Nidravatva means sleep. So that's what he asked for. He went nidravatva. And Brahma says, oh, yes, I grant your wish. And from that time forward, he spent 6 months of every year sound asleep. So this is how they tricked the big demon. So, are words important? Oh, yes. Very important. So, I could go on, but I'll stop there. And that was a little bit about Saraswati. Now, we have a little mantra. Saraswati holds a veena, which is the instrument for music. And she also holds a mala up in her right hand, chanting beads. Because she is always chanting, praying, repeating the mantra, always. In yoga philosophy, when mantras can be done for different reasons to different gods and goddesses, we've taught mantras here for a long time, and you can do them X amount of times. And you could get the siddhi of the mantra, the success, the fulfillment. But the real yogis, the sincere spiritual practitioners, they chant constantly. They don't chant out loud all the time, but they'll be... I once met in India this... old man, he was very high soul. His name was Krishna Das, and he was in his late 70s, early 80s maybe. And he was constantly chanting. He listened to you and he replied to you, but when he was just standing there, you could even be speaking, he'd be going. He's always chanting. Always, always, always. And that's is creating purification. It's not like he was spaced out. He wasn't. He was fully present. But he was always that connection to God and that purification. By chanting, you purify the negative karma. And you raise the vibration more and more and more and more and more. So this person wouldn't even think about it anyway. He did it for so long, he didn't have to think about it. Yeah. So that's how they would do it. So Saraswati has the mala, and then in this hand, the book. That's the book. Right? To read, to increase your knowledge, your learning, or to write. Okay, the first, this mantra is Aing Saraswatiay Swaha. So Aing is a bija mantra. It's seed sound. And Aing is Saraswati's bija. Is there any more of those? There you go. Aing is Saraswati's bija. So you don't say Aim. Yeah, I've got the pronunciation just below that. Aing. Saraswatiay. Saraswatiay Swaha Aing Saraswatiay Swaha Aing Saraswatiay Swaha.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is it meant to be Saraswati or Swati?
Oh, it can be either. It's Saraswati.
What did the Indian say?
Saraswati.
Because in English there's no the alphabetical T, like we say Saraswati. So in over here we say Saraswati.
Yeah.
So Saraswati.
So you can say va or you can say wa. Saraswati or Sarasvati. Either one is okay. Oh, I see. I wrote them differently, didn't I? I didn't even realize that. Sorry about that. So, Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. 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 All right. So it means I offer my respects unto Saraswati, the goddess of learning and patron of the arts.
She helped me during my study.
And this one's almost a doctor, and this one's a gemologist. So there you go. Benefits of chanting this mantra. If you chant this mantra with regularity, even better if you choose to undertake a vrata, a vow. So, for example, you say, I'm going to chant one mala, one round, 108 times, 108 beats, minimum, every day, until... it's for 1 year. No matter what, I will do this. That is a vow. And you keep this vow. There is so much power in a vow. It can be simple. I mean, how long would it take you to chant this mantra? You know, not even 5 minutes on a mala. Or you say, I'm going to chant 5 rounds or 10. But you say something comfortable, not too much, you know. Something you can keep. Now, if you don't want to take a vow, that's fine. But a vow gives it that much more power, if you can do that.
Consistency.
And you chant that for a year, tremendous benefit will come. Now, you also chant this for the following reasons. Creativity, artistry, speech, poetry, musical composition, writing, singing, dancing, painting, drawing, design, inspiration, becoming or finding the muse, wisdom, understanding, compassion, empathy, advocacy, beauty, expressing the essence of the gentle feminine, truth, and love. Not bad. Pretty good. If anybody wants a mala, does anybody need a mala?
Yeah, I want to get one.
Here we have Tulsi mala. Tulsi is a plant sacred to Vishnu. She's a great devotee of Vishnu. She is the sacred basil Holy Basil.
What's that?
And when you, I'll tell you, when you chant on a mala. This one? Yeah, yeah. No, not Swatik is crystal. This is pearl. What do you say? Money? Moti? Moti. Moti.
Yeah.
Moti.
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 The flash one.
Yeah, this is pearl one. Now, what you do is, this is the head bead.
Yeah, normally you can... Nine
yeah, also on your hand. Yeah. You can count your hand. But this is the head bead. That's the God.
God.
Yeah? So you don't chant on that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So you start on the one next to it. You use your thumb and your middle finger mm-hmm. of your right hand. Thumb and middle finger.
And don't touch this finger.
Not touch with this finger. Yeah. Correct. So you take the first bead and you say, Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Go to the next one, obviously. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. And pull the beads toward you, like this. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha, 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 Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. You don't have to say it out loud, you can say it quietly. Japa means muttering. Now, you can chant the mantra driving down the street, but do not use this driving the car. Okay? Not a good idea, believe me. You can say it in your head. Of course you can. So, you go all the way around like that, yeah? And then you come to the end. And you don't cross over the head bead. You turn back around and go the other way again. So you're always this offering respect to. Yeah.
Don't jump over his head.
Yeah, Viji will show you. You go back the way you came. Exactly.
108 of them.
108. Well, you can count them. We hope there's 108. We gave mala to one lady, and she came back. She says, "There's only 106 on this." I said, "Well, sorry." So when you go to India, we just buy a whole bunch.
We saw the guy making weed ones. Yeah.
Oh, they had a man in his 80s with one of the little hand.
Tiny Indian man, and he was using his foot like this, and he was tearing them.
Yeah, his foot was operating the little machine.
The little machine, and then he was actually making them into the round balls.
What do you call that machine?
Lathe.
The lathe.
Lathe. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had at least, but operated with the foot.
And it wouldn't.
Yeah. It wouldn't.
It wouldn't, yeah.
It's not wood.
Well, it's wood. I mean, it's the stem of the plant, yeah. You know, it's the...
Oh, right.
It's
a
kind of wood.
It's a kind of wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, now the other thing is you should not let the mala touch the floor. Because the floor.
But it's okay with the
cat. Yeah, because the floor is a dirty place. Because that's where feet go, and dirt. So, respectfully, you don't put things on the floor. You don't put sacred things on the floor. And you don't touch with your feet sacred things. It's considered offensive. Okay, good. So.
Suppose rosary beads grew out of this.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
They're good for what engaging the touch sense too. Mm. You're engaging the different senses.
Not just the tongue or the mind. See, you can chant a mantra in your mind quietly. Mm-hmm. Now you're using the mind. Mm-hmm. Now you use the tongue as well. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Now you use the mind and the tongue. Mm-hmm. Now you have two things. Then you use the mala and you have touch. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Now you have three things.
Mm-hmm. And you can hear yourself.
And you can hear yourself, so you have four things.
And you can watch yourself. Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, then you watch, you look at the picture, for example. Or you close your eyes and you see Saraswati there, like she's in front of you, even better. And you bring her a little gift, something nice, lotus flower, maybe, or your latest creation, offer it at her feet, and watch the fun begin.
Do we have to report back?
Of course you do. You have to share. Speaking of which, it's time for sharing. Anybody? You want to share any wonderful experience with us?
I do.
Please. Glindy has been working with the Yantras, so tell us what you've experienced, please.
I only ever worked with the Shri one, the Shri Yantra, and that was for a few years. And one Tuesday night, we had finished the 108 names for Surya, for the sun god, and I had my eyes closed, and all of a sudden, the red part in the center, I didn't know what this was, this. It's spinning at me and comes at me. And then I'm on the inside of it and this thing's going around and around. I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? So that was the first time I saw it. So
machine.
It and when you're on the inside of it, I kept going back into it again and again over the years. And when you're inside, you can manifest anything you want. But because it's so peaceful, you don't want to.
You lose the desire.
Right. Yeah, that's what happens when you're on the inside. I kept praying to Lakshmi that she'd teach me more how to use it. So that's what I've been doing that for the last few years. And then one thing she told me a while ago was that these things that are coming out, the four directions. They're
the doors.
They're doors.
Yeah. Gates. Dwara.
The different realms. So the heavenly places and the spiritual places where we are now, and then the lower dimensions. So that was that. So during the week, I was meditating on this one, on Vishnu. It was the first time I had used his, and his changed. I was crying. I was just crying so much. And then what happened was, these here move out like that, sort of like when you put a stone in water. This one activates energy, and this one is just all heart. And then when you're looking at it a lot, the petals, they disappear, and it's almost like a firework. And again, you can go into the middle of that.
Yeah, like if you're in the middle of a firework, the explosion goes out in every direction around you. When we sit on the ground, look up, it looks like a circle. But if you're in the middle of it, it goes out 360 degrees. Like a ball.
But it was very difficult to hold it. You could only see it for a second or two, and then it would be gone.
And then you come back.
You go back and focus back into it, and you see it again, and then it would disappear. So
yeah, I've had a similar experience with that too. It's hard to.
What happened all of a sudden? You were.
Well, that's what it does when you stay focused on it. It's almost, some time ago. What's that kind of art they have?
Yeah,
the
you see a picture hidden in the picture.
Yeah. What do you call that?
Yeah.
What? That holographic sort of art it was quite popular back in the beginning of the 90s. Mm. They would do calendars and different things, and you'd see.
Could never do that.
And you'd stare at it, and then the whole thing would just shift, and you'd see that other dimension.
Oh, yeah.
But you couldn't just see it. You had to sort of enter into it. This is the same idea. But this has many, many more dimensions. And this is actually spiritual. Not just...
And what I like as well is that he has Lakshmi in the center of him, too.
Srivatsa.
You have to have one within the other. They're not separate.
No, they're not separate. You can't separate God and Goddess. You can't separate the divine element. Pardon me, the feminine element of God.
You can't see that. If you want to meditate on Lakshmi, you couldn't see her unless you've got Vishnu in here. And you can't see Vishnu unless you've got Lakshmi here. Otherwise, they won't show.
Same as like, you know, the chakras, and they have like, you know, what you call Kundalini.
Yeah.
And then a couple other as well, Ingla, Nadi, and the other one.
Pingala.
Like they have like a one feminine and one.
Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna.
Yeah.
Sushumna is the channel up the middle. Very good. Okay, ready? Let's meditate.
What are we doing now?
Pardon me?
What are we doing now exactly?
You're going to close your eyes?
Yes.
And meditate. So I'm going to take you through a meditation. Get comfortable. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body, totally, completely. Relax, breathe, and let go deeply. Relax. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering to the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Relax, let go. See and feel yourself connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax. All right. You're in a very beautiful place in nature. Fragrant, many flowers, trees. The trees all have either fruits or flowers. Warm breeze, clear sky, the odd cloud. This is paradise. This is the most beautiful place in nature you've ever seen. and you walk through the woods and into a clearing. And there is Saraswati, goddess of learning, patron of the arts. There she is. How does she greet you? What does she say? What does she do? How does she respond when she sees you? You have brought her a gift. Look down in your hand. What have you brought her? Don't choose it. Present her with this gift now. How does she respond? And she has a gift for you. And she presents her gift to you now. What is it? What does she give you? What are you to do with it? And what does she say to you? How do you feel? Continue with the meditation until you are finished. If you are finished, slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. All right.